Hello and welcome to the next episode of Code and Beyond, a podcast where we talk about software development and anything beyond that. My name is Pablo and I'm here together with my friend Alex. Hi Alex.
Hi Pablo.
Today is our 20th episode. To celebrate, we have a special guest, Ana Hernández. She's going to help us today with the topic, which is SEO. Hello Ana.
Hello Ana.
Hey Pablo and Alex. Thank you for inviting me. I'm honored to be the first guest.
Nice, this is quite exciting, yeah? Yeah, let's start with you, Ana. Tell us a little bit about you, how you got into SEO, and where do you work, and what do you do? Tell us a little bit about you.
So I am currently not an SEO specialist, but I've been for a while, so I think I can share some knowledge around that. I'm currently a GM, so a general manager at Wordfinder by Your Dictionary, which is a word games helper. I'm going to say helper. I'm not going to say cheat, even though some people would say it's more of a cheat. But we're part of an online dictionary. And we're part of a bigger brand of media products that's called Love to Know Media. So I'm currently the GM, which is basically a product manager, but with a bit of more of like business stuff into it. But I was the SEO specialist of the same team I'm sort of leading now. And I've been a copywriter and a content writer for over a decade now. And obviously when you're writing content for the web, SEO is sort of forefront of everything you do, as it should be sometimes for some web development. I think that's why you guys have invited me here, so that I can shed some light into how that sort of combines with software development. But yeah, that's who I am.
That's correct. We are very curious about your opinions about software development and how it integrates with SEO.
I am excited to learn a lot of stuff because I could imagine that my SEO knowledge is very, very primitive. It's like it's super outdated, first of all, and most probably super primitive.
Yeah, by working with software developers, especially now that I'm more obviously more integrated in the product team, it's interesting to see how some of you do know a lot about it, some of you not so much, and especially when it comes to technical SEO, I guess a bit of general knowledge cannot do any harm.
How did you get into SEO? How did you start? How did it caught your attention?
My professional career has been a little bit all over the place, which I guess it's a good thing, especially nowadays when you need a bit of general knowledge of everything. I studied art history at university, and I ended up doing a PhD on medieval art, which has nothing to do with SEO. But while I was doing my PhD, I had some spare time. And because obviously, while writing a PhD, you're writing a lot. You're used to writing. I got into copywriting and writing for webs. So I helped writing content for several different webs and translating content English to Spanish and vice versa. And so when you start writing on a website, you really need to know your SEO, because otherwise search engines, especially Google, obviously, but any other search engine would never rank you higher and no one would read your content. So that's how I started. And that's where it ended me at as a GM, which is a bit of an interesting career when I decided to quit academia.
And I just realized that we have been talking about SEO for a while now, and we haven't said what SEO means, right?
Well, to me, it means a black magic of some sort, no?
It sort of is, actually. So SEO stands for search engine optimization, which means just trying to get search engines to rank you higher. As they say, as in the SEO world say, the best place to bury a body is in page 2 of Google. So if you're not in page 1 of Google, no one would ever even notice that you exist. So it's basically just a set of strategies to try and get any search engine to rank you higher. So the top 3 are obviously the golden prices where everyone wants to be. And it doesn't only mean Google. It can be Bing, it can be Baidu, it can be Yandex, any any search engine, but obviously Google is still the biggest one. So we tend to correlate SEO with Google. And it involves a lot of different things. So it's a set of strategies. And like Alex was saying, it is a bit of magic because Google never tells you what they use for rankings. We know there's over 200 factors that are involved in the ranking, and all of them have different weights. So but you never ever know what's happening behind. So a lot of the SEO work is just testing different things and seeing what works and what doesn't. The good thing is it's a pretty big community, and we're all connected. So we sort of share knowledge and know what techniques sort of work and what techniques don't work.
When you talk about these techniques, so I'm not a specialist in this area whatsoever, but sometimes when you read something like you found blog post, let's say, right, and you see that it's very, very optimized, this optimization jumps on you and the post doesn't look natural anymore. It's like overdoing of this, over optimizing for the search engine, but not for the end customer, not for the person who reads this in the end. How to define this threshold, when to stop, how you decide, okay, like this is already optimized enough that it's nice working for search engines, but also still reads nice for human being?
That's a great question. And this over-optimized content might be following a bit of older SEO techniques, because in the old times of SEO, Google just looked at keywords. So basically, whatever people were searching for, I don't know, restaurants, and that the page would be like filled with the word restaurant everywhere, because that's how Google worked. The good thing is that Google is evolving and it's updating. There's updates absolutely every day. And what it does now is it understands natural language a lot more, and it has had a lot of natural language processing stuff put into the algorithm. So right now, Google understands context a lot more, understands user intent a lot more. So even if you're not asking exactly for restaurants and its places to eat, it's still going to rank content that says restaurants. So Google is getting a lot better at that. And right now, the best SEO is actually the highest quality content and the best user experience. That's what should rank. There are still some gray areas, and there are still some things that Google hasn't figured out yet. So there are some still what we call black hat SEO techniques that sort of work. But I'm not going to talk about them because no one should be doing them, even though I must say sometimes they do work. So in SEO, there are like three main things that you should be looking at, what we call the three pillars of SEO. And the first one is what you're saying, Alex, so content. And we say in SEO, content is king. So good content usually is equal to good rankings. The thing is that now a lot of people create good content, so it's not always as easy as just creating great content. So so there's what we call on-page SEO, which is content and all the related things like the navigation, a bit of the user experience, everything that's on your page. Because again, Google ranks pages, not sites. So even on your site, some pages might be ranking, some pages might not be in Google's index. And then there's off-page SEO, which means anything that you cannot really control, although we try to, which is, for example, links pointing to your site, which to Google are signs of authority and of that site and that page being good content. And so that's what we call off-page SEO. So that's why people do what we call link building. So they try to create content that will get them good links. And then there's technical SEO, which is what you guys probably are more interested in, which is how to make sure that Google can actually read your content right and can actually understand what your site is about and what that page is about. Because there are more than 200 factors in Google, including speed, for example, and very technical things. It's harder and harder to get Google to rank you better. So I would say right now, good SEO is always good. Again, good content, good user experience. That should do the trick.
That sounds awesome. I would prefer to have content written for me and not for Google.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance as well. It's not only that content is written for Google is that sometimes even the topics are sort of written for Google. So instead of thinking about what readers would like, you're searching Google and saying, oh, Google is ranking this well, let's write about this as well. So yeah, it's taking over.
Yeah. So Google is deciding the content we consume.
Yeah. And to be honest, Google is also obviously interested in high quality content, just because without content, Google wouldn't exist. So it's a very tricky balance as well, because Google needs people to create websites, because otherwise there's no results to show. But then we're sort of fighting Google to get the best rankings, and Google is more and more showing content by themselves. So you see Google has more and more these widgets at the top where it says the weather or the your flights. It shows you the latest news. So sometimes you don't even need to click through to a page to see what you were looking for. Which means that Google is sort of stealing some of that audience from the content creators, just because Google is giving the answers a lot more and you don't need to leave Google sometimes to see what's happening. So that's always been the fight within the SEO community. Need to get the clicks to your site, and you need Google for that, but Google is more and more giving the answer by themselves. So yeah, that's a fun topic as well.
That's because no clicks means no ads and means no money. Yes. for your site, right?
Yes. So obviously you want to rank higher just because you want more people to click. And about, I have the numbers here, but I think it's 70% of the people or something like that click on the first result on Google. And 50% of users click on the results within 99 seconds of searching. So it's like you go, click, that's it. So unless you're in the top three, it's really hard to get the click. And if Google has a widget at the top, you're even further down. And for example, on mobile, you don't even appear sometimes in the results. So it's tricky because Google cannot anger content creators, obviously, because it needs the content, but it sort of lately is a bit.
I'm wondering if this optimization, so we always mention Google because it's a main monster on this arena, but there are also smaller engines, right? Is this optimization also specific for the search engine? Is there any aspects that you need to consider when you optimize, let's say this is for Google, this is for, I don't know, Bing, this is for DuckDuckGo and so on, or it's the same rules for all of them?
They have very similar baselines, but they're not the same. So it does depend on where you want to appear on. So I know people in China, for example, want to optimize for Baidu or and things like that. But Google is sort of the hardest one. They're the ones who have been there out there the longest and the most successful. So usually if you're optimized for Google, you should be optimized for everything else. But they do have different things. There's even a thing called ASO, which is App Store Optimization. So you can also do sort of SEO for app stores if you have an app, for example, and it's different if you're in the app store for the iPhone or you're in the Google Play. So it's search engine, because obviously the app stores are search engines as well. They all have their own beasts. They all have their own rules, sort of set of rules. But yeah, we tend to, most of the SEO community is geared towards Google.
Yeah, it's funny to see that if you optimize for Google, then you're kind of optimized for everything else.
Yeah, they sort of all have very similar ways of optimizing and similar ranking factors. It's just Google, I guess, I don't know if they have a bigger team or they're spending more of their resources on search. They tend to have the strictest set of rules for them. Again, as I say, it's more than 200 factors. Some of them weigh a lot more than others, but if you sort of take care of all of that, all your bases are covered.
When you were a SEO specialist, how did you work with the tech team? Were you part of the tech team or you were collaborating with the tech team? How was it for you and how do you think it should be?
That's a really good question. And I know different companies do it differently. for starters, a lot of their companies outsource their SEO. They just hire a company and they have people optimize their sites. In the case of Love to Know, where I work, because it's a media company and content is sort of our main product, we have in-house SEO, an in-house SEO team, just because SEO is central for us. When I became the SEO specialist at the team I'm at now, WordFinder, it was a bit of a test. I was the first one to try that out. We were trying to figure out what would work better, whether it was SEO people who worked in different teams or just to integrate an SEO specialist within the product team, together with the UX UI designers, with the software developers, the QAs. And that's what we did. And I think it worked really, really well. I was just part of the team as anyone else. I wasn't bound by sprints because we do Agile, we do Scrum in my company. I wasn't necessarily bound by sprints. I was more of the designer type person who would do a lot of the work before the sprint starts. So with any new feature that we were going to add or any change to the site, I would take a look at it, make sure that there were no SEO problems, that it was SEO optimized. And then I would do a bit of the QAing as well. Once something was released or in staging, I would check that, for example, technical things, that I would crawl it with one of the tools we have in SEO, like Screaming Frog, and I would check that, I don't know, if we were adding a noindex, that the noindex was there, if we were adding a canonical tag, that the canonical was there, and that Google could sort of see the page more or less okay, which is one of the main SEO technical problems, that Google can actually crawl all the content on a page. So that's how it worked. And I would go to all the meetings with the team, the daily stand-ups, the refinements, the sprint plannings and the demos and the retros and everything. So it was just one more within the team. And then anytime anything came up that was SEO related, I would be in charge of it. Plus, I would do monitoring our rankings and strategizing for new SEO opportunities. But I think it was a very natural integration within the team. And I think it worked really, really well.
Nice. So you were keeping the team in check so they render the pages so Google is happy, right?
Yes. I'm going to say technical SEO is not my forte. It's not my where I'm most strong at. But the product I'm at has a lot of technical SEO details that it needs to nail. And so part of my job was just being the SEO voice within the team and making sure that Google could actually see the content and that it could actually see what we wanted it to see. And also that the content within it was optimized for Google, a bit of what Alex said, the keywords were clear within it, but it was not what we call keyword stuffy, which means there are too many keywords in there, that we have all the metadata there, the meta descriptions, the meta titles, the alt tags in images, that there were good anchor text on links. All of that is part of SEO as well.
If the page is super simple, it's going to be easier for Google to crawl it, right? So
yes,
as close to the HTML you are, the better for Google. Is that correct?
Yeah. HTML is the best. JavaScript is contentious within the SEO community, and it's part of Google keeps issuing documents about JavaScript and how to optimize that for SEO. So yeah, how Google works, I don't know if you all know that, but I'm just going to give you a very brief description. Google has spiders that crawl all the internet. And what it does is it basically follows links. So it follows what links from pages it already knows, and then it just follows links from that, discover new pages, either on your own site or other sites. And then Google renders that page, and it renders JavaScript in a separate queue, and it renders it late after it has rendered the actual HTML, the actual page. And once it renders it, it decides whether it wants to index it or not, because it doesn't index everything. It has to be decent quality. If it seems like it's spam, Google won't index it. Or if it seems like it's not worth it, it won't. And the index is basically just a huge database. And then based on the index. Google ranks the pages on search results once someone queries something on Google. It just ranks it based on these 200 factors, and it's always algorithmically. There's no manual ranking. They do manual checks behind the scenes. Like, they do have a group of people who actually check that rankings on Google are okay, and they go manually there and they check the pages that Google is ranking for certain queries. But the ranking is always algorithmical, and it depends on, so it just basically compares pages on the web. It just compares similar pages and decides, okay, this is going to go first and this is second based on this comparison. The easier way to do that for Google, the easy way for a spider to see anything is just plain HTML. Then it would see the whole content. It also looks at like the structure of the page. So it likes to see that there's an H1 and then an H2 and H3, that the page is structured. So it understands what the main content of the page is. And Google understands content really well. It has really good like natural language processing tools, and it has machine learning. So it learns to understand it better. Machine learning was introduced quite a while ago in Google, actually. And it's getting better and better. JavaScript can be a bit more difficult. And even though Google usually is able to render, Googlebot, I mean, the spider is usually able to render JavaScript, it's not always the case. And even though they say they always render JavaScript, we should be careful. So the best advice is to always make sure that the page degrades gracefully, so that without JavaScript, there's still content in there and the page can still be understood and it can still be valuable for Google and for the users. I guess this is the same for users, because sometimes some clients cannot render JavaScript properly. But yeah, I'd say just make it degrade gracefully.
A few years ago, I was running a job board for Ruby developers. And at some point I discovered, I think it's schema.org, so you could inside of your HTML source, you could specify chunks and then kind of tell the Google, this is the header, and this is not just the text, it's actually drop ad, and this is the title of this drop ad, these are the salary expectations, and there's a set of attributes you could assign. So basically within this text, it's not just text, but it's a special type of information. And if I remember correctly, it was not just about drop ads, it's like a set of different types of content. And that was helpful for Google, because then Google doesn't have to guess. And also, I remember that after I implemented these changes, I added basically these special attributes to the page source. In search results, my items from my site, they started looking differently, because Google knew that it's already drop ad. It had this like a special widgets for them. That was pretty cool.
We call it structured data, and it's schema markup. So it's schema.org, again, as you said, and it's always and really nice to have. It's not a must for Google, but it is nice to have. As you say, it just helps Google understand your page and all the elements in your page. There's tons of different schema. There's schema for recipes where you can put like ingredients, and there's schema for FAQs. There's schema for bio pages for authors. There's schema for news. There's schema for almost everything, and there's more schema coming out. So basically what you do is just structure, you tell Google which part of the page is the information. And then, as you say, it just shows what we call enriched results, which are, you know, when you have this, you have the blue link, but then underneath you have several other links that are sort of smaller within, like justified within the link you had above. A lot of the times that schema, or sometimes it's just Google knowing what the structure of the page is. And schema also allows you sometimes to get what we call the feature snippets better, which are those chunks of results that are sort of highlighted at the top. And sometimes you just get a paragraph of text and then the link below. And that's just Google giving you the answer again, which again, they're contentious. They're a bit weird because sometimes it means you don't get the click, because you just have the answer on Google, which isn't great. But yeah. what we call the zero click searches are just getting bigger and bigger, even though Google is saying they're not. They have had problems in the US. They have had to answer before politicians there, because some businesses are saying Google are doing unlawful competition, because they're using the results on their site so that people don't click through. But yeah.
It depends, right? Because if you're a product, you don't care if people reach your product through your content, your pages, or through straight from Google, right? Because you only care about the bookings, for example. So if they book through the Google ads that are on the front page, even better. Less clicks for them.
Yeah, true. I mean, Google ads are a completely different thing, that's for sure. So Google does have paid campaigns, which are marked at the top, and you can see that. So that's people paying for results to appear at the top. And then what we call organic search, which is, so SEO only takes care of non-paid results. They usually, so what we call result number one is usually below the ads, which means, again, you still have less chance of ranking because you get the ads at the top and then maybe a snippet and then maybe you're there with SEO. But yeah, if you're a product, you don't care. If you're a content company, then if Google just gives everyone the answer on the results page, then that can be more of a problem because maybe they don't need to. Like if you, for example, have a recipe on your site, but Google just shows it up there, no one needs to click to your site to see it. Or if you're showing the weather, for example, it depends.
Yeah, I see.
But true. SEO, like organic organic search is still the highest acquisition channel of any site. Like most people search on Google and most people find businesses and products through Google. So it's still the most valuable acquisition channel. So SEO is still at the forefront of, I guess, what you would call marketing, because it's a different way of marketing, but it is marketing in the end.
When you were talking about these schema languages that help Google to understand the skeleton of your page and the different areas, that remind me usability, right? Because if you improve your website so it's compatible with the different screen readers, for example, that means that you have a really nice markup and everything is well defined, all the attributes are in place, things like that. So does it mean that if you have good usability, you also have good optimization for Google?
Yeah, it sort of does. Google, obviously, the Google Spider, Googlebot, cannot see images. It won't see the design of your site. That's why I was saying H1s and H2s. So what works for accessibility and having not so much area labels and things like that, Google doesn't read those. But for example, good alt text on an image or good anchor text in a link that explains what's happening there, that helps Google a lot. So good SEO also is also synonym sometimes with accessibility again and with also with good user experience in general. Because speed and now core web vitals, which are this new trendy buzzword that we're hearing everywhere, which is basically good performance of your site, they're also parts of ranking factors in Google.
Those core web vitals is something like a time to render first page or something like that, right?
Yes. So there are three core web vitals. They're basically performance or speed-based. And this is a very new thing. Google started talking about this probably, I don't know if it was late 2019 or early 2020. It was, and it started saying that this was going to be a huge part of ranking, and they were going to look at these three core web vitals for ranking. They have been released on mobile. I think it was June 2021 that they were released onto Google Search. For desktop, they've said it was going to be mid-2022. Basically, there's three things. There is what we call CLS, which is cumulative layout shift. This just means that things don't move around on your site. So, for example, when you have an ad here, it doesn't just suddenly move when something else loads.
I love that.
Yeah. So, again, it's just good user experience, actually, for Web Vitals. So what Google does for this is it runs it on Chrome. So it gets real data from real users on Chrome on your site. And you can check what your score is. And it just sees how much of the shift there is. And it's called cumulative because it's throughout the whole user session. It's not just by the time it loads. It's just that the page doesn't move around while the user is using it. Then it has LCP, largest contentful paint. It's just the time it takes for the site to paint the biggest part chunk, which can be the H1, it can be like it's content. So, but it's usually the H1 or the first paragraph of text or something like that. It's just how long it takes your site to paint that first element. And then the first input delay, the FID, is just how long it takes for the site to render something that the user can use. So either a button or a search box or like anything that the user can input or scroll sometimes. So those three things are sort of the main things. To be honest, it's been a bit of a bummer because we all were optimizing for it a lot. And then they started to sort of tone it down and say, but it's not going to be that important. It's just going to be when there's a draw, the one that has the best score with vitals will go first. And then right now we're seeing that there's not really that much of an impact. We haven't seen this because Google does regular, what would they call, core updates, which is huge updates to the algorithm. And those you can feel like it's like an earthquake, lots of ranking shift. And you were trying to figure out behind the scenes what's happening because they never tell you what's changing. But with this Core Web Vitals, they actually told us, but there wasn't that big of a change that we have seen, at least for now. So yeah, but everyone has been hectically optimizing for this. And although, at least in my company, all the developers were focused on Core Web Vitals for months.
Maybe that was the whole idea, just to scare people. So majority will fix all the things. And then, okay, the job is done.
Yeah, at least we have better websites, I guess, because of that.
Yeah, you mentioned, now I'm curious. You mentioned that the algorithm changes from time to time and it's like a earthquake, so you don't know what's going to happen, so it can destroy your ranking, right?
Yes, you can actually drop from the first page or even from the first 10 pages of Google.
I'm thinking as a developer here, so when I have issues with the issues that break other parts of my app, what I usually do is I try to have a regression test. Right. So at least I realize that something is going on. Do you have something like that on the SEO world? Do you have any kind of tests or things that alarms or monitoring? Like I will be very anxious without knowing what's going on.
So Google has updates every, like tiny updates every day, and your ranking changes from day to day. So we're always monitoring. The main tool we use is Google Search Console. It's like the actual tool that Google gives you, but there are private tools. The most famous ones are SEMrush and Ahrefs, and you can basically just monitor every keyword you have and see how it shifts on your site. Because it's not only position, it's also click-through rate, because see whether people are actually clicking through. And all of that. So Google has minor things. And then it has what it calls the core updates that happen. They used to happen a few times per year, but in 2020, there were tons of core updates. And it sort of tells you afterwards or on the same day they tweet, like, we're rolling a core update. It should be done in 3 days. So everyone is sort of shaking because you never, ever know what they have changed. So there's all this analysis after of people saying, so it's probably this, they probably have changed that, but you never know. So you're just monitoring, hoping for the best. And if the best doesn't come to happen, then you just try anything that you can think of. So we know more or less what some of the things Google is looking at. We don't know exactly what they are, but we have an idea. So you sort of try and optimize for that, but it's again, it's sort of a guesswork, but it works. The bad thing about this is that Google might take a while to recrawl your site and see the changes, even though you can ask for Google to crawl them. And so once you lose a position, it might take even months and months for you to regain it back if you actually can.
That sounds like a stressful situation.
Yeah, that's the thing about SEO. It's just, it's tricky sometimes. Hopefully, if you do everything right and if the site has good quality content and it's good for users, you shouldn't be losing any ranks. And these core updates tend to affect what we call YMYL sites, which is your money, your life. So those sites are the trickiest ones. So things that are about health or finances and that affect real people's lives, those are the ones that get shaken up more often by Google because it's... Google is really worried about not ranking the wrong results in those types of queries.
Is it possible to say that if you do everything right, so if you don't try to cheat and do this black hat optimization and so on, so your chances are higher to keep your ranking even after these core updates?
Yes.
Because I guess Google is also interested in not just shuffling results all the time when they update something, right? They should have some respect towards the content owners.
Yeah, so as long as your site has good content, good UX, you're giving people good information, it's crawlable and indexable, and it performs okay, you should be fine. And then what the SEO game is always trying to overtake your competitors and rank in the top three. So as long as you've taken care of all this on-page, off-page, and technical SEO, and you've done it in a white hat kind of way, you should be okay. The thing is whether you can rank higher or not. And then if you're ranking for fewer keywords, so for what we call search volume, so not everyone searching for the same types of things. So there are keywords that have very small search volume, so not a lot of people search for them every month. Their keywords are huge and have huge search volume. If you're ranking well for one of the huge ones and you're ranking only for very big ones, a core update might hurt you more, just because if you lose one of them, then you lose a lot of traffic. Whereas if you're ranking for smaller ones, it might be better. So the ideal thing is also to be aware of what you're ranking for and try to rank for as wider a selection of keywords as possible as you can.
Okay, so don't put all eggs in one basket, basically.
Yes, exactly.
But again, I'm really surprised how Google is shaping the market of the content.
Yeah,
you're paying attention to how good the keyword is. So if you know that this keyword has a ton of volume, as you mentioned, maybe you don't write an article about that because chances are that it's not super good for your overall strategy.
Yeah, and it's harder to rank for higher search volume keywords because a lot of more people are ranking for them. So once there are established results at the top, it's harder to get in there. SEO tools have what we call opportunity scores, and they say like it's going to be really hard to be top three with this keyword, just don't go after it. The thing is, you shouldn't only be bound by that, because I don't know how many. I remember seeing a percentage that was quite high of new searches every day. So things no one has ever searched for before on Google. So every day people search for new things. Even if it's a keyword that doesn't have any search volume, people might get interested in it. And there's also trends and new things that happen that there might not be that much content out there about. It's also interesting not to just try not to be bound by keywords. But at first, when you build a website, because you just need to rank, you should be trying to go for things that people are actually searching for.
Yeah, that's the thing. Even if you have the best content ever of one specific topic, if that topic is not trendy, you're not going to get traffic, right?
Yeah, if no one's interested in it, you're not going to get any
traffic.
That's
a mother that is the most accurate article in the world.
No.
Okay.
I mean, if anyone's interested in it and you have the best content, you'll get that one click. But
it means that you will be the number one in this niche, right? In this niche of out of 10 websites in the whole world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you usually give your software team advices on how to code for SEO or how to write the website so it's SEO friendly?
Not on how to write it, because the how is always up to them. I mean, ideally, even in the inception of a site, there should be SEO involved, just so that you don't build it in an SEO unfriendly way, which happens a lot. And then you have what I call SEO debt, which is akin to tech debt. So it's stuff that you need to fix just because you didn't do it properly the first time. And it's as cumbersome and as boring as fixing tech debt. So
it sounds like exactly the same.
Yes, it is. So that's why I say, like, ideally, even when like figuring out the architecture and the initial structure of a site, SEO would ideally be involved, a tech SEO. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not an expert in technical SEO. I just have a very general knowledge. But yeah, so that Google can actually crawl the site and can actually understand the site. So it's not so much about the actual coding, and in all the projects I've worked on, that was like the site was already there. So there wasn't that much that you could do about the actual coding and how the site was shown. A lot of the sites that I've worked on are super JavaScript rich. So it means that Google doesn't always see everything as it should. Even though they say they do, again, Google does have very, very decent, I think, documentation on how to code stuff. And there's articles on their developer sites, on their developer relations sites about JavaScript and about, I don't know, how to implement the noindex tags, how to implement canonical tags. What I can do is right now, more from an SEO point of view, a technical SEO point of view, is for any new features, any new pages, make sure that we've decided whether that's going to be indexed or not. So you can add a no index tag to Google just to say, please don't index this page. You can also block crawling from Googlebot. You can block Googlebot from crawling your site if you don't even want it to take a look at it. You can add canonical tags. I don't know if you guys know what that is, but it's just, in case anyone doesn't, it's just telling Google, that's to avoid duplicate content. Duplicate content is a big thing, especially sites like Commerce, for example, have big duplicate content problems because they might have one page for each size, for example, of a product if you're selling t-shirts, but basically all the pages have very similar content. It's just the size that changes. Google would penalize you for thinking your content is duplicate and would drop those pages from the index. So you have to tell Google, so the canonical for this page is actually this other one. Don't index this page, index this other one. So things like that are things that we can add to the code. Schema, obviously, ideally you would like to add schema markup to your code. All of that is things that we can add. Actually, for a schema markup, there's a lot of CMS that implement it. So it's the writers who add the markup to that, and then it just gets included in the content, which is ideally the way to go, not having to do it manually. Again, Core Web Vitals, obviously, that's a biggie right now, making sure that there's no shifts in the layout, there's no all of that, making sure that the structure of the page is fine, that there's H1s, H2s, H3s, and all of that. So that's what you can do for now, making sure that anchor text is optimized, making sure that all the images have alt text. From a coding point of view, I think it should ideally be an early decision to make sure Google can render the page correctly.
Which is basically follow the good practices, avoid as much JavaScript as you can in the front, and careful yes. with your web page performance, right?
Yeah. For example, things like Google doesn't see, like it doesn't see JavaScript links very well. It needs like a proper href to show that there is a link there. If you do JavaScript redirects, for example, it can be confusing for Google because you're still issuing a 200 when it might be a 301, or all of those things are things that you need to think about while implementing JavaScript, just to make sure that Google can understand what's happening.
It would be awesome if everything will be optimized towards the end consumer,
yeah,
not the search engine.
For the user, yeah. I think that's what Google is aiming for, but it's still a long way. Like, it's trying to understand language better. It's trying to know better whether links are artificially placed or they're true, and it's really, they're pointing to really good content, and they're trying to see exactly what users want. But it's obviously going slower, and especially slower than black hat SEOs that are still trying to trick the algorithm. It's getting harder though.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? It's money involved. So being first on Google means traffic, which means money. And yes, that also means tons of people trying to trick the algorithm.
Definitely. And it's adding a lot of, machine learning to it so that it learns faster and it can know faster what's happening and what the user wants. They have, like in the last Google search conference, they announced a thing that I think it's called MUM, that it's really, really crazy. Like, it's going to understand everything from images to videos and chunks of videos, and it's going to be able to get everything together and just give you a huge, like a very comprehensive answer to everything you ask for. And hopefully, but the thing is, that's sort of Google trying to create the content themselves, trying to put together the answer you need instead of relying on content creators to have the best content and answer that. Google is trying to get the best for the user, or at least that's what they say.
Don't meet you.
I mean, it's still a huge corporation. So, and they're still very, very secretive about everything, which is, on the other hand, you don't want to tell everyone why you're ranking something, because then everyone would try and trick everything. And mom can also understand different languages.
That's mind blowing.
Yeah.
Slightly scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can put together like this big answer for anything. The example they have is Mount Fuji, and it just creates a itinerary for you.
What do you mean, like how to get there?
Yeah, how to get there, what to see, take a picture here, and it gives you
images. So you ask for Mount Fuji and he just gives you all sorts of information, like how to get there, the nice places, the all the context around the Mount Fuji.
Yeah, that's, and it gets it from sites in Japanese as well, like it understands different languages and it puts it all together in your language.
Whoa. Okay,
so yeah. So maybe, that's the future of search, at least for Google.
Don't want to look pessimistic, but in this kind of scenarios, I always think that what if in this case, maybe with time, we won't see the whole picture. We will see only what we are given, right? So this is what you need to know. That's it. And so, okay, I just consumed it. But maybe there is something like outside of this picture that I was provided. It's just the Google's vision of the world. It's not mine.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
It's already happening, right? That's what we mentioned about this person that is publishing an article that is super specialized and is an awesome article, but nobody's paying attention because he's not in Google. So if you're not in Google, you don't exist, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, now I think we can wrap it up like that. So with these scary thoughts, I think we can wrap the episode. And I'm super curious about this mom thing, Anna. So maybe we invite you over again once this thing is released and you can tell us a little bit more about mom and other SEO stuff. What do you think?
Yeah, whenever you guys want, happy to pitch in.
Maybe awesome. Something about specific for podcasting, optimization for podcasters, something like this.
Yeah.
But first of all, for this one, for today, huge thank you for all the things that you shared with us. That was amazing. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you for inviting me again. And I hope this was helpful and useful for your listeners.
That's for sure.
I learned a ton of stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming over.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Okay, let's wrap it up then.
Yep.
That's it for today, and thank you for listening. In case of any questions, simply send us an email. Our address is codeandbeyond@protonmail.com. You will also find it in the show notes. Keep being amazing. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.